Let's welcome Ken Arr. He owned a jingle production studio from the late 1970s until 2005. During that time, he worked with radio stations and individuals to fulfill their various jingle needs. These people were all around the world, too. Since his retirement in jingle production, he has been a writer and also a jingle historian. Hi, Ken. How are you?
Hey, I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm good. It's an honor to have you on my show.
Well, it's an honor to speak to you, too. I think we should clarify one thing, because, you know, when you and I talk about jingles, we may mean one thing, and other people may mean something else. So the two basic kinds of jingles in the world, as I see it, there are commercial jingles for advertisers and shopping centers and jewelry stores and things like that. And usually they're 30 seconds. They used to be 60 seconds. Now they're mostly 30 seconds. And then the other kind of jingle is the kind that sings the call letters or Z105 or, you know, whatever the radio station calls itself. And these are much shorter. They're usually, 5 to 10 seconds in length, and their primary function is to identify a radio station. And in our jingle studio, we did a lot of both, but primarily the last 5 years we had the studio, we were working almost exclusively on radio station jingles.
I think everyone gets an equal dose of both. We're going to talk about the production process for recording and writing those kinds of jingles.
You know, it's funny. Still, even contemporary movies that you see, they don't give you an accurate picture of anything, including radio stations. I mean, in movies I've seen as recently as a couple of years ago, you know, you see the talent, the person on the air, in one room, and then there's this big panel of glass with all sorts of equipment behind it on the other side, and there's somebody on the other side of the glass who's holding up signs and, you know, pointing at people and starting tape machines. And, you know, it isn't like that at all.
Not at all.
As you know, usually it's, you know, one person with a computer in a room anymore. But it's the same thing with jingle studios. You know, a lot of times you'll see depicted in a movie or in various presentations, you'll see, you know, a whole orchestra coming in and, you know, there's a vocal group or a singer there at the same time. And for the most part, that's not how jingles are made at all. And if you like, I can just very briefly describe the process, because it's very different from recording albums of music.
Sure. Why don't you go ahead? Tell us how jingles are made.
Okay. Before we get to the studio, there's the telephone process, and then there's the writing process. So the telephone process is very important, perhaps the most important part. And that's where I, as a jingle writer at that time, or people who are doing it today, we'll sit and talk to the client, the person paying for the jingle, the person with the radio station at the store, and really try and figure out what that person wants the jingle to sound like. Who is the market? Is it, you know, if it's a commercial jingle, it might be 18 to 24-year-old females. If it's a radio station, it might be adults over the age of 18. But that will give the jingle writer a clue as to what kind of sound to produce. Is it going to be big band? Is it going to be rock? Is it going to be all electronic? So that's part of it. And then the other part is, you know, what are the lyrics? What is the jingle going to say, or the jingle package going to say in the case of radio station jingles? You know, if the phrase is, you know, Omaha's best music, you know, Q108 or something like that, and all the jingles have to say that, well, that's fine. If it's something else, then we need to know that too, so that there's no surprises. The next phase would be, you know, sitting down at a piano or at a computer and actually composing it, writing out all the parts that different instruments are going to play and what the vocal is going to be doing. And when I was writing jingles between the late 70s and 2000, we wrote out every note for the singers. There was no ad-libbing. You know, we would get either a vocal group or a soloist or whatever it was, and they would come in the studio and they would sing whatever I wrote. Then when we finally get to the studio, many people may have the concept that what happens is, you know, the whole band and the singers all come in at once and, you know, they do their little thing and go home. But that isn't the way it works at all. If you're going to be using real instruments as opposed to drum machines and synthesizers. The people that are playing the rhythm track, drums, bass, guitar, sometimes keyboard, they'll come in and play just their part first. Then they leave, and then if there are other instruments, brass or strings or saxophone or whatever else, they'll all come in at a later time and hear the previous parts in their headphones as they play along. And all of these instruments are recorded on different tracks so that later they can be separated or mixed, or you can add some reverb to a saxophone without adding it to the drums, or, you know, you'll have ultimate control over it. Then after all the instruments are recorded, they all go away, and then the singers come in, and through the same process of listening to your headphones, they add their parts. So it's really kind of a multi-step process, and then the engineer will sit there and combine or mix all of these various parts together to get a final product that can be usually digitally distributed to the client over the internet, or, you know, however they want to get it to them. And then it can be played on the air. So it's really a kind of a long and involved process to make something that only lasts a few seconds.
That's a great summary of how a jingle is made, whether it's a commercial or also just a call letter jingle. And to summarize, it begins with a meeting where you discuss the needs of the jingles.
Right.
And then it goes into composing the material and then the sessions and the mix down. But this whole process, about how long does it take?
Yeah, it kind of depends on several factors, one of which is, you know, how soon do you need that? You know, that's the question we always used to ask our clients. A long time ago, the answer used to be, you know, 2 weeks, 3 weeks. You know, I need it by October for our ratings, or, you know, whatever the answer was. And now everybody kind of wants things immediately. So the turnaround time has been shortened. And, you know, with digital editing and digital mixing and all of these things, the physical process of making jingles has speeded up a lot since I was doing it. When I was writing what they call vocal charts, which is, you know, what are the singers looking at? What do the notes look like when they're singing? We called that a vocal chart. Now they're pretty much done. Instead of writing out longhand like I used to do on a staff piece of music paper, now it's done with software, various software, Finale or, you know, something like that. And then it becomes a digital file that can be edited just like anything else. But anyway, that does speed up the process. So now a turnaround time of 2 weeks might be about typical.
And you were talking about actually writing out the music. And I want to mention that is can be a very difficult and time-consuming process. I tried writing my own jingles, and it was not very successful, but it took a very long time to get something. And then I took some jingles that were made by PAMS, for example, great jingle company, and I tried listening to it by ear and figuring out what's being sung, all the vocal parts.
Mm-hmm. Between my age of 6 years old and 16 years old, I was kind of forced to take classical piano by my parents. And I didn't like it at the time, but I found that it really gave me a very good grounding in reading and writing music and understanding how chords fit together and how vocal patterns or instrumental patterns fit together without stepping on each other. And it was very, very good training. And then I was in some extremely, excruciatingly bad rock bands when I was in high school. And then I played solo piano at a piano bar. That's a whole other experience I won't get into. But, you know, the more you are involved with it, the easier it gets. And when I first started writing jingles, it was difficult to get exactly the sound I wanted to, particularly in writing a vocal chart for a five-voice group or a seven-voice vocal group. But as I went on, it got easier and easier until by the, you know, the later stages of my jingle writing career, I could crank them out very quickly and, in fact, often without even sitting at a piano because I had done it so many times. But like you, I had a great education from listening to jingles that other companies had created before me. The writing was often really brilliant, and the vocal charts were just spot on. And by listening to them and analyzing what they were doing, it greatly expanded the foundation that I had from learning how to play classical piano.
Once something is finally composed, and it doesn't matter how long the process takes, once you get something that's good and can be sung, the singers bring that content to life. Could you comment a little bit on the singers and their importance in the production?
All right. Well, when I was producing jingles, we worked with with five singers, and they came in every week. It was three guys and two girls, and some of them were with me the entire time I was producing jingles, which was 24 years. Three of them were, actually, and the other two, you know, 9 and 11 years or something like that. So they began to work very well together as a team. And the way I saw it was, you know, they were in the studio, and I was in the control room, separated from them by a big glass window, and I was in charge of the control room part. And I really let them be in charge of how the singing was done. And my group leader was a guy named Doug Nickel, who had all of them sight-read music perfectly. I mean, they were just amazing. They would see these vocal charts that I wrote out, and they would just nail them. It was amazing. I never figured out how they did it, but they did it. You know, reading a middle part, like an alto part or a tenor part out of five parts written on the page is something that not many people can do. But I did look to them occasionally if one of them had a better way of voicing a chord, or a guy said, let me sing an F sharp here instead of a G sharp, I would let them do that. So I did rely on them for that, but pretty much we would have to sing anywhere from 25 to 40 short pieces of music in a 3.5-hour session with 10-minute breaks every hour. And so we had to move at a lightning pace, just really, really fast. Pretty much they would read what was on the page. They would make small modifications if necessary, but we just had to move. And the whole thing is with jingles, if you don't go at a pretty quick pace in the studio, you don't make any money because you can't sing enough in the session. So, as I say, we would sing anywhere from 25 to 40 short radio station call letter ID jingles in a 3.5-hour session. And if you don't have people that read music really well, and you're not geared up and ready with everything in the right place, you're not going to make it.
What about their vocal style? Do you listen for a certain quality in their voice in going into making a jingle?
What dictates the precise style, and there are nuances. You know, if you're doing country, or if you're doing pop, or if you're doing, you know, kind of a bluesy thing or a soul thing, you know, there are slight differences in how you use vibrato, or how intensely you sing, or do you slur the pitches a little bit, you know, all those kind of things. But generally, the instrumental track that you're singing with or singing over kind of determines what the style is. And the singers were all very well versed in any musical genre. Three of them were musical teachers and in the schools during the day, and then they'd come in and sing for me at night. So, you know, they're very familiar with the different styles, and they would kind of automatically gravitate to the right style for a particular vocal chart. And sometimes I would have to say, you know, let's have a little more vibrato on this. It's more of an intense rock kind of thing, and then they'd do that. Or sometimes I would tell them to sing a little more softly and blend a little closer if it was kind of a soft romantic sort of thing. But pretty much they knew what to do. They would see the notes, and they would know what to do. We would number every piece of music to correspond with the instrumental tracks, and I'd say, all right, you know, V2602, and they would pull up that vocal chart, and we would just go and do it. There was not a lot of discussion, because the first time they heard the instrumental track, they knew what to do. So, yes, in a sense, it was collaborative, but it was a very fast collaboration. And I think that if you have really talented people singing, or playing instruments, for that matter, you know, they know where to go with it. They can look at the chart, and they know where to go with it. There's not a lot of discussion about style, really.
That's very interesting. They just all come together and know what to do. One thing I am wondering about, and maybe a lot of people listening in the audience who hear radio jingles or commercials all the time, but have no idea on the cost. It's not like they cost $10 or $20. It sometimes could be several hundred dollars per cut. Could you talk a little bit about cost of radio jingles?
Let's again kind of make the division between commercial jingles and radio station call letter, what we call ID jingles, ID for identification. Let's start with those first. A short, let's say a 10-second jingle for a radio station might be anywhere from, I don't know, $150 to $300, depending on if it's for personal use or if it's for a radio station. It might be more. Usually, those jingles are bought in what we call packages, which would mean several jingles of a similar theme or a similar style purchased at one time. If you're a radio station, you don't buy one jingle with your call letters. You might buy 5 or 10 or 15 or 20 at a time. And each one might cost, depending on who the studio is and how many people are involved and a lot of other factors, anywhere from, say, $150 to $300 each. On commercial jingles, it's kind of a different animal. When we were producing them, we charged anywhere from $1,000 to $3,000 for a 60-second jingle for an advertiser to use. And I'm grossly oversimplifying our pricing structure, but it was certainly in that range.
Well, that leads me to my next question, Ken. Why would a station or an advertiser spend so much money on radio IDs or commercials? Are they effective?
Okay, well, let's look at it this way. You know, if you're at your radio station and somebody else is at another radio station across town playing a similar format or style of music, let's say oldies or rock or whatever it is, you know, you both have access to the same music. You both will be running the same kind of commercials. You both will have newscasts on your show. You both will have community announcements. So the only thing that really differentiates you, really, there's two things: the personality of the announcer and the jingles. And I think more in the 60s or 70s, jingles really created an image of a radio station, I think, much more than they do today. It's kind of a little bit of a lost art today, although it's still around. But, you know, at a time of radio or go-go or fun vibrations or music power, you know, these were some themes that radio stations adopted from jingles. I mean, the jingles would come out with, you know, some new phrase, more music, more often, or whatever it was, and then a lot of radio stations would buy that type of jingle. So today, I don't think they play really the same kind of role, but I think at one time they did. So that's why radio stations would buy jingles, to help solidify their image, help people remember the call letters, help people remember even sometimes the frequency if it's an FM station, or the name of the show if it's a podcast or, you know, some kind of specialty show. Just to help people remember. People remember things that are put to music in a different way than they remember something that's spoken or something that they read. And without going into a lot of psychological background on that, that's kind of the simple way of putting it. It helps people remember.
And it's so very true. In fact, about a month ago, I was talking with someone. Now, I'm a jingle freak, and that means that you love jingles. And we were talking about Dan Ingram at 77 WABC in New York. And and he was telling me about how he, you know, doesn't remember a whole lot about his show, but he remembered one of his jingles that went, "Dan Ingram." You know that one?
I do. It was recorded in 1966, and it was a male a cappella, meaning no instruments, just five males singing the name Dan Ingram. It was very memorable.
And here it is almost 50 years later, and people still remember Dan Ingram.
Exactly. And you're speaking to kind of what I was trying to get at there. You know, if an announcer says the call letters, you know, he can do it 100 times and people may not remember it. But a vocal group or, a soloist on a jingle sings the call letters with a particular melody, what we call in the business a logo, then it's much easier to create a mental impression of that radio station or of that announcer.
Well, what do you think about the future of the radio jingle? And who are the leading companies to this day?
Okay, well, let's take one step back and talk about the future of radio first. I think that
this is a hard subject.
Yeah, that is. I think that radio now has so much competition from other sources, you know, internet, and podcasts, and Pandora, and you know what have you, that radio has lost its exclusive hold. It used to be that radio would provide services that you couldn't get elsewhere. They would provide the weather, but now you just open your app and you can see what the weather is for your neighborhood, you know, on the Weather Channel app or something like that. They used to provide time and temperature. Well, people wear a watch. People can check the temperature in a number of different places. And so radio used to kind of have a monopoly on news, too. If some news was fast-breaking, you'd tune in your radio. But now you can watch it on TV, you can watch it online, you can get it anywhere else. So I guess this is a long-winded way of saying that radio has lost its monopoly. It's just one of many choices now. So where does that leave radio? I'm not sure. And I'm a writer for a radio publication called Radio World, and I have written about this subject and many others, of course, for the last 30 years, and it's a question that people that pay a lot of money for their radio stations are asking themselves every day. So as far as what happens to jingles, well, that depends on what happens to radio. I think that certainly jingles will have a place in certain formats or music styles more than others. Certainly at an oldies station that's trying to evoke an image of the 60s or the 70s or even the 80s, jingles would fit in well there. Perhaps in a country format, jingles would fit in well. But jingles really had their prime in the 60s and 70s. And now they're still around, and companies like TM Studios in Dallas, Jam in Dallas, Real World in Seattle, a couple of companies like this are still out there, and they're making jingles. But it's not the kind of thing that a radio station has to have now. I think in the 60s, they really had to, because there were so many radio stations that were competing for the same audience. I think now jingles are not a must-buy item. They're a luxury item that some stations or some individuals can afford.
There are still people out there like you and me who like these jingles, who collect them from stations 50 years ago or whatever the case may be, and some of us even buy personal jingles. And that's an option some jingle companies have.
If you compare the number of people that collect, you know, records, vinyl, albums, 78s, you know, music in general, so the number of people that collect jingles, I would say the number of people that collect jingles is minuscule. You know, there are probably, well, there's more now than there used to be, because they're more easily collectible now than they used to be. But it's a pretty small group of folks, comparatively speaking.
Are you still active in collecting or trading jingles?
I don't do that so much anymore now. I mean, believe it or not, people send me jingles on CD, or they'll send me WAV files via Dropbox or WeTransfer, some digital file sharing system, all the time. You know, they come across a new package they think I'll like, and they send it to me. I don't sell jingles. I don't sell copies of jingles. I don't trade jingles. What I pretty much do now, my only connection to the jingle fandom world, is I would say not a week goes by that somebody doesn't send me a question about jingles, or they'll send me an MP3 of an air check or a tape of a radio station on the air, and they'll say, do you know what package this jingle is from? Or do you know who made this jingle, or something like that? Every week of my life, I still answer those questions, and I get a big kick out of it, to tell you the truth. So I'm still a fan of jingles. I'm still a jingle freak. I think I was probably one of the first of those. I started collecting jingles actively in 1968. So I've been collecting them for a while, you know, with a small network of people. But, you know, I don't sell jingles, and I don't trade jingles anymore.
I think it's important to note that you and I, the first time we talked was actually because I sent you a clip just like you were describing, and I said, you know, hi, Ken R., my name is Morgan, and I was wondering if you could help me identify this jingle. Those weren't the words I used, but I couldn't figure out two jingles, and I remember I emailed you about that. I probably speak for everybody else that contacts you as well. We appreciate you being out there as a jingle historian.
Well, I'm happy to serve in that role, especially in my aging years here, but I do get a kick out of hearing from young people that are interested in jingles. I also hear from a lot of musicians that are trying to write jingles, and they'll send me a vocal chart, or they'll send me an MP3 of something that they've put together and ask for my advice. And I'm flattered that they do this because, you know, it's not something that I do anymore, but I'm happy to share whatever I can. I don't charge anybody for any of this. I make no money off of anything I may have to do with jingles. I just kind of get a kick out of it, and it tickles me that people still like these things that are, in some cases, 40 or 50 or even 60 years old. They get as much of a charge out of it as I do. And I think that's wonderful.
It's a wonderful hobby, too.
Hey, before we part here, and understand, I'm happy to talk longer if you like, but I don't want to put people to sleep that are listening to your show. Many of the questions that people ask me about either my jingles or Pam's jingles or TM jingles or jingles of the 60s and 70s and 80s are answered in one of my three jingle-related or radio-related books, which are available on Amazon as electronic downloads. And they're very cheap. And, you know, I only mention this, you know, not because I'm making a fortune on it, but because many of the questions that people ask me are in those books. And if you go to my website, which is kendeutsch.com, kendeutsch.com, or if you go to Amazon and look up Ken R., the initial R., it will take you to the books, and they answer a lot of these questions. It's kind of funny. I sold out of hard copies of these books. I wrote them in the early 2000s, between 2000 and 2005, and I sold out of the hard copies, you know, like within 6 months or something, or within 5 months. And so now they're only available as downloads, but this is cool because I was able to add more pictures to them and a couple of updated chapters and, you know, things you can't do if you've got a hard copy printed book. And the other thing I was going to say, I don't know if you've ever, you know, work with Amazon as a bookseller or if anybody in your audience has, but, you know, every once in a while they will deposit into my account $7.32 for sales in Japan or, you know, $4.92 royalties for, you know, somebody in Africa or Great Britain that bought my books. And it's really, I just get a kick out of it because I'm not doing anything. I'm just sitting here. You know?
And then you get a check from Japan.
Yeah, it happens. They're not big checks, you know. They're small. Actually, they just deposited into our account, but it does happen. And people are buying these, and I've had very, very good feedback on the books from people that say that, you know, it really answered a lot of the questions. And I have interviews with many of the really important key singers that were a big part of that sound in the 60s and 70s. Some of whom are no longer with us. And so people do get a kick out of them. So that's my little plug for the books.
Well, certainly if anyone missed those addresses, you can email me, oldiescometolife@gmail.com, and I'll help you out with Ken's books. I did get a question here, Ken. I promised this listener I'd ask you. This guy is named Jim. He's out in Jim Thorpe, Pennsylvania. Great listener to my show. And I don't know if this is addressed in your book or not, but he wants to know, what is the longest cut that you ever produced for a station ID jingle?
Well, we did a number of record length cuts for some radio stations, and when I say record length, I mean 2.5 to 3 minutes. And usually, these were like a city song, you know, kind of an ode to their particular town, or it might have been for a local sports team. They wanted us to do a fight song for a sports team, but we certainly did a number of, you know, 2 or 3 minute things. I think that's about the longest radio station jingle that we ever produced. And we did a number of those.
That's very interesting. And some of the jingles from the 1950s especially were just naturally longer than 10 seconds, too.
Well, yeah, I think life moved at a slower pace at that time. You know, if you watch on YouTube or something, if you watch a TV show from the 1950s or the early 1960s, hardly anything happens. You have these long scenes that seem to go on forever, and they're very, very slow-paced, whereas if you watch a show today, you know, there's a cut every 3 or 4 seconds, and it just moves, you know, it's short attention span TV now. And I think it's the same thing with jingles, too. They used to take 30 seconds to sing an intro to the weather. You know, will it be hot? Will it be cold? Will it rain? Will it snow? You know, what's the weather going to be? You know, whole long production with a big band. And now, if anything, it's, you know, Seattle weather, you know, and then it's over, and that's it in 2 seconds. So that's, I think, very much in keeping with the speeding up of the pace of life. And I think now very few radio stations have an interest in longer jingles because, first of all, they can't afford them. And second of all, they don't want to stop everything they're doing because they want to play the maximum number of songs and they want to get their commercials in, and nobody has time for a 3-minute, you know, song anymore.
In a way, that's sad, but also effective. And because I'm a jingle freak, next year marks the 60th anniversary of PAMS Productions and their debut of PAM Series 1, their first jingle package. I'm going to get my own 40-second jingle from Series 1. Now, their music tracks back then were a little quite different and not perfect, but I'm still going to do it anyway.
Well, I think that's admirable. I think that's very admirable. Yeah, recording techniques in the 50s, in some places like New York or Chicago or Los Angeles, were pretty darn sophisticated. But in Dallas, not so much. In Dallas, you know, they'd set up the band and maybe hang two microphones from the ceiling, and they'd record the whole band at once. So it sounded like the drums were across the room or the, you know, piano was 20 feet away, and that's because they were. And so if you listen to a music track or a background track for a jingle that was recorded in the late 50s, the recording technique sounds very, very dated. You know, now things are mic'd very closely. So if you have drums, you'll have, you know, 10 or 11 microphones on just a drum set. So it sounds like it's very present and right in front of you, whereas, you know, in the 50s, it would sound like it's across the room, and that was just part of the sound. You hear that in records, too.
And even going before the 1950s, that was the style. Before I cut you loose, Ken, I have a surprise for you.
Oh? Okay.
This is, when I say I have a surprise, sometimes that scares people, but this is a good surprise.
Go ahead.
I want to play 3 of my jingles for you.
Uh-huh.
And now, you're connected over the phone, so they're not going to sound perfect, but the first one comes from one of the least successful PAMS packages ever, known as the Friendly Giant.
Oh, my goodness. I wondered if anybody was ever going to buy a cut from the Friendly Giant. For those uninitiated, it was a package recorded in 1962, and it was horribly dated and corny then. And I'm sure it's even more so now. It was sung by an all-male vocal group and lots of xylophones and timpanis, and it just sounded very, very dated, you know, even 50 years ago. So I'm keen to hear what you had done with it.
Well, it's very interesting indeed, and John Wolfer and Jam Creative Productions did a really great job on it. And I did my research, and only 2 stations actually bought the Friendly Giant, WCKY and KHEY. And then, 53 years later, Oldies Come to Life did. So I'd like to play my Friendly Giant jingle for you.
Let's hear it.
It's a lot of fun. Organs in high gear, so stay right here. Super groovy. Morgan's Oldies Come to Life.
I couldn't resist. I loved it.
And it sounds, at least the singing sounds better than it did then, I can tell you that. But yeah, that takes guts to buy something like that.
Well, I think other people liked it, at least in my audience and on my show. So maybe maybe, just maybe, there will be a mass purchase of Friendly Giant jingles in the years to come. Who knows?
Don't bet on it.
I'm going to bet my life savings on that. And
yeah, okay.
The other two jingles I wanted to play for you came in this morning.
Wow.
They're very new. The first time I played them was about 15 minutes before your phone call here. For this order, I got one custom a cappella and one cut from the Go-Go Series 29. The Series 29 cut requires a little explanation. One of my dear friends, her name is Michelle Cugnot, has been listening to my radio show since I began it in late 2010, early 2011. And she's been a big supporter. And I remember when I first got a jingle sung by Pam's, she was like, where did that come from? And ever since then, she's been wishing to have her own jingle. So I made that dream come true for her in that I got a jingle for Oldies Come to Life sung for her.
Wow. Okay.
Now that is a dedication.
That is. You know, of course, I did the same thing that you did. I had some jingles sung for a couple of girls, actually, when I was, buying jingles. And it always got a reaction. I'll say that. You know, they got a big kick out of it.
Well, I'm going to use this till I'm fired or until I die, whichever comes first. Good investment for me. I'd like to play it for you.
All right, go ahead.
Michelle Cugnot, you're the best. Morgan knows you love. Oldies come to life. You're super groovy. Thanks for listening.
What do you think about that?
Yeah, super groovy. Absolutely. I love it. It's and it sounds pretty authentic. I mean, it's that all guy sound, and the track sounds good. So, you know, good job from Jam and fans on that.
Thank you. And I wrote the lyrics, and it took me a while to figure out something that worked and sounded good, and that one does.
Yeah, it does.
Thank you so much. I have Ken R's approval. That means something. All right, so to close our interview, and I just want to say thank you so much, Ken, for being here on Oldies Come to Life. And I know we planned on 15 minutes, but I can talk, and especially about jingles, and so I really appreciate you being here for some extra time today on the show. My final jingle that I'm going to play for you was also delivered this morning, a custom a cappella for WABC-FM, Stereo New York. Now, there were, I think, five a cappella cuts and two instrumental IDs for this jingle package. And the a cappellas are just beautiful. And so I proposed to John, I said, can I get this jingle resung for Oldies Come to Life? And I'm thinking that it's the first time it's been resung since 1969. Don't quote me on that, but that's what I assume. And he told me that someone had to sit down and make a transcription note by note and adapt my lyrics to it and then record multiple layers of vocals. And it sounds like an in-depth process. And the outcome is this wonderful jingle. Do you want to hear it?
Oh, let's roll it.
All right, here we go. Do-ba-do-ba-do-ba-do-do-wee.
Morgan super groovy. Oldies come to life. Do-ba-do-ba-da.
That's amazing.
Wow, it's extremely authentic, and like the original, it's even in the same key, and really, really sounds terrific. I think they did a great job.
John does a great job at Jam Creative Productions. All right, Ken, hang on the line, and thanks for being here on Oldies Come to Life.